You're obliged to pretend respect for people and institutions you think absurd. You live attached in a cowardly fashion to moral and social conventions you despise, condemn, and know lack all foundation. It is that permanent contradiction between your ideas and desires, and all the dead formalities and vain pretenses of your civilization, which makes you sad, troubled, and unbalanced. In that intolerable conflict, you lose all joy of life and all feeling of personality because at every moment they suppress and restrain and check the free play of your powers. And that is the poisoned and mortal wound of the civilized world. And this week's opening quote comes from Octave Mirbeau. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Well, folks, here I am in Peru. I'm here for the next month until I go to Mexico, where I'll be speaking at the Anacapulco conference, and then I'll be back in Australia because I have a few speaking dates back in Australia. But it's nice to be back here. It's certainly nice to be out of the Australian police state, even if it's only for a month, because Australia is most definitely turning into a police state, though it does seem to be happening all around the world. It doesn't just seem to be happening to Australia. I'm seeing similar situations happening overseas and indeed in many countries, most especially in Europe, of course. It really has been quite amazing to see just how quickly the situation in Europe has deteriorated in the last couple of years, really quite frightening. I mean, we knew this was going to happen, but to see how quickly it's unfolded has been quite amazing, really. But look, I've got a bit of news to share with people as well. There was a gig that I was booked to do in the UK at the Brighton Dome in March. That gig has been cancelled, folks, so that's why you've been having trouble getting your tickets for that gig, because it's no longer happening. And also, anybody who would like to make a contribution to the Crow House, I no longer have a PayPal account that I can use because they've closed yet another PayPal account, or at least they've harassed the person who owns the PayPal account, because that's what PayPal does. So the only way I'm able to receive any contributions to the website at the moment are via direct deposit into the bank. I'm attempting to set up a Fund What You Love page, and hopefully that will provide a means whereby people are able to contribute to the Crow House, because it would be great. It's been very, very difficult to survive since the PayPal account has been closed down. So I will keep you posted on that one. But anybody who was making any type of regular contributions via PayPal, please do not make any more to the PayPal account that you were using, because that account is no longer associated with the Crow House. So I just thought I'd put that out there for anybody, and I'll let you know as soon as I'm able to receive contributions any other way than via direct deposit. I'll post the information to the website, and I'll make sure I mention it to you on air as well. And really, my deepest thanks to anybody who has contributed to the Crow House in the past. I mean, it's all you guys, folks. You're the only thing that keeps it going. I don't have any advertising on the Crow House. I don't have anything there for sale. It's all for free. And I've also never become a YouTube partner. I've never monetized my accounts, so I don't have any AdSense on my YouTube account at all, because I don't feel it's fair for people to be watching advertisements. So it is only the people that keep it going, folks. So to all those people who have made a contribution, I do thank you very much. And to anybody who has ever thought about making one, now would be a really good time if you can possibly afford to do so. But again, the only way you can do so at the moment is via direct transfer. So yeah, just a little bit of housekeeping there to start the show. But getting back on topic, speaking of Australia being a police state, it most definitely is, ladies and gentlemen. Things have really deteriorated in Australia in the last 12 months. Just recently we saw a young family that was accosted by police who came to the wrong house. They thought they were busting a crystal meth lab, but they were not. They were at the wrong house, and they absolutely terrorized and brutalized this family, ended up putting the husband in hospital, terrorized their children, all sorts of things. they're actually really going to town with the drug thing here in Australia, folks. They've got RDTs now, not RBTs that are random breath tests, but they have RDTs that are random drug tests. And they're pulling over as many people as they possibly can and testing them to see if they've smoked cannabis. And, of course, if you've smoked cannabis or even if you've been around someone who's smoked cannabis, it can stay in your fat cells for up to 2 months and does not mean that you are impaired. Even if you smoked cannabis the night before, it doesn't mean that you're impaired as far as your driving abilities go, and yet they're pulling people over because they are getting a massive amount of revenue from it. People are losing their licenses all over the place. And I believe it also gives them an opportunity to go back to people's homes and search them and terrorize their families as well. And this is happening while medical cannabis is actually making some quite large headway in Australia, has actually been legalized for medical use in Victoria. And, of course, if people are using medicinal cannabis, they will also test positive on these results. And this is causing a huge stir, but it just shows how far they're willing to take this police state, folks. And they're doing it in every manner that you can think of. They are just harassing people in every aspect of their lives at every opportunity they can get. And apparently for no real reason. We've seen a truck driver pulled over by police, and just a guy in a small truck, like a worker, a builder sort of truck. And he was pulled over by police simply because he'd gone to the same town a few times in a couple of weeks. He'd taken the same route to the next town, and the police pulled him over because he was under suspicion because he'd been basically keeping a regular path, and they thought he might be a drug dealer or something, and so they pulled him over and searched his vehicle. And this was from the surveillance cameras that they have all over the place, that map the cars and map which direction they're going and check what everybody's doing from every moment of the day. They just noticed that this guy had been having a regular route to the next town, and so they thought they'd best pull him over and just check him out just in case he was doing something illegal. I mean, this is what it's got to, folks. They're actually surveilling the cars as they go past and mapping the routes that people are taking, and if anybody does anything out of the normal or anybody does anything too regularly, they're pulling them over and checking them out. Of course, they're doing this to keep us safe from terrorists, presumably, but really when you look at the treatment that the people are getting at the hands of the police who are pulling them over and who are ransacking their houses in cases of mistaken identity, it would appear that it is the police and the government themselves who are the real terrorists in this matter. But of course, that's all we've come to expect from our government and our police these days, so it really shouldn't come as any surprise to anybody. New anti-terror drills in Sydney this week as well, folks. They like to do that. They like to make sure they keep the fear ramped up in people and make sure that people believe they are under threat of terrorism. Even though we live in Australia and all the terrorism that we are creating seems to be happening in the Middle East. And don't forget that, folks, that it is the West that is creating all of the terrorism to begin with. But they are holding terror drills in Sydney, I think, this week. And so that would indicate that they are very likely going to be staging a terror attack in Sydney soon. I suspect this will happen while the Commonwealth Games are on in Queensland, personally. But I may be wrong. But it would seem that they are preparing for such an attack, so it would seem that they are about to stage one. That's what they have these drills for, folks. But folks, it really is getting outrageous. In Australia, we've got mandatory vaccinations for anybody who's receiving government benefits. Pretty soon you'll have to show your papers at a checkpoint. I mean, this is the way it's going. They're really, really ramping things up. Everything's going digital too in Australia. My bank has gone digital. There are no longer tellers at my bank. Everything is done by machine. Whether you want to withdraw money, whether you want to deposit money, even if you want to get coins changed or deposit a check, it's all done by machine. It's very uncomfortable, folks. Same as the supermarkets. These are all becoming digital. They are basically squeezing the tellers out, and they are pushing everybody towards automatic machines. And of course, they will have a number of machines there, but there's only one that will accept cash. Even in Byron Bay, they've got the public amenities block has gone digital. So everything is going digital, everything is going smart, and it's all becoming very, very uncomfortable. Everything's going smart except for the police, of course, with the induction rate now lowered to except IQs of around about 104. Police are going anything but smart. They seem to be going dumb while the rest of the world goes smart. And that is a major problem in itself. Because the police these days simply can't think clear enough to know when to do the right thing. They can't really use their own judgment in any situation. They don't feel confident enough to. They just have to do what it says in the book. And that is a real problem for everyone. But of course, they're doing all of these things out of necessity, folks. They really are. They can't have smart police officers because smart police officers may realize that they're doing the wrong thing and actually want to do the right thing at some stage. And so the only way to combat that is to hire stupid police officers. And so that's what they're doing. But again, folks, they're doing it because the wheels are falling off everything. They really are. People are seeing the system for what it really is. I mean, what Russia has done in the Middle East with ISIS has really opened the eyes of a lot of people. I mean, you had the United States and its allies going in there for months, years even, trying to apparently combat these terrible terrorists that are rampaging across the Middle East. And we've had Russia go in there in a matter of weeks and just knock them on the head substantially. And so the wheels are falling off everything. The wheels are certainly falling off Israel as well. Recently, they put forth legislation which bans any Palestinian from incitement. And by incitement, what they're talking about is anyone who posts anti-Israeli information on the internet, on Facebook. Anybody who criticizes the crimes of Israel can now be charged for it if they're a Palestinian. And they're working to make it global. The Israeli Public Security Minister, Gilad Erdan, recently unveiled plans to censor the internet worldwide, and he has called for the building of an international coalition to counter criticism of Israel and to look for things which may be seen as incitement. And that's what they're calling incitement, folks. Anyone who criticizes Israel, they're saying this is incitement. But what would it be when the Israeli foreign minister calls for the death of Palestinian mothers because their children give birth to little snakes? Would that be not seen as incitement? What about the Israeli rabbi who recently called for the extermination of everyone in the Gaza Strip? Would that not be seen as incitement as well? Not to mention the constant bulldozing of Palestinian homes. This may constitute incitement as well, wouldn't you think? And there's no need to discuss the checkpoints all through West Bank, the wall around Gaza Strip, the constant harassment that the Palestinians are subject to under Israeli occupation, the kidnapping of children, the incarceration and torture without charge or trial. All these things could be seen as incitement as well, but we won't touch them for the moment. It's very interesting, folks, how only people who criticize Israel are accused of incitement, but anybody that Israel criticizes, this is not seen as incitement. It's seen as perfectly logical. But really, in this sort of a situation, folks, you've got to ask yourself, what other country needs to go to this type of lengths to stop people from criticizing their actions? And what are the actions of this country that is causing so many people to criticize them? That's the questions that need to be asked. Because there's no other country on earth that needs to form these sorts of groups to prevent people from criticizing its actions, because there is no other country on earth that carries out the level of atrocities, war crimes, and human rights abuses that Israel carries out. And you know, the same can really be said for our own governments on a home front when you really look at things, folks. Look at Australia, look at the laws they're bringing in Australia and the terminology that they're using, terms such as anti-government extremist. What sort of a government would need to label anybody who criticizes its actions as an extremist? This is really an extremist view that's been put forth from the government, and really they've demonstrated themselves to be the extremists in this case. But you've just got to ask yourself, why are they so scared of criticism and what actions are they carrying out that would cause them to need to put legislations in place to curtail any criticism of their actions. These sorts of things are very telling, folks. If you really look at this and you look at the terminology the governments are using, you've got to ask yourself, why are they using this type of terminology? And since when has it been seen as extremism to simply criticize the actions of politicians? I mean, honestly, isn't this what voting is all about? Really, when you're voting one party out and another party in, essentially you're criticizing the actions of the previous party. So when is voting one party out going to be seen as extremism? When is calling for elections going to be seen as extremism? I mean, how far are they going to take it, folks? And of course, how far they're going to take it is going to be just about as far as the people let them take it. And that's the question. How far are you prepared to let these people go? How many freedoms are you prepared to lose? How much of your life and liberty are you prepared to have eroded away from you until you're going to stand up and say something? You know, a wonderful quote by a Hopi elder that said, if you're not going to speak out now when it matters, then when will it matter for you to speak out? And that's the question people need to ask themselves, folks. Because it matters now that people speak out. Because if they don't speak out now, then pretty soon they're not going to have the ability to speak out, because they will be classed as an anti-government extremist if they do, and they will be imprisoned without charge or trial simply because they let it happen and they didn't speak out when they had the ability to do so. So you need to ask yourself, is that you? Is that the position that you're in? Are you simply allowing a prison to be built around you because you're too scared to speak out? Because if that's the case, then I would suggest you start speaking out now while you still have the ability, because once the prison is constructed, you're going to have to walk between the lines, and these lines are just going to get narrower and narrower until every single aspect of everybody's lives is controlled and scrutinized and everything you do is done by the book. And that's where we're heading, folks, if people do not take the opportunity to stand up and speak out while they still have the ability to do so. I mean, admittedly, there are a lot of people that are making noise about this sort of stuff. I mean, otherwise I wouldn't be going and speaking at these conferences. There's all sorts of people that are coming to speak at these conferences, such as at the Anacapulco conference next month in Mexico. But when you come to these conferences, folks, it's important that you take the information home and act upon it. That's the most important thing, you know, not just come to see speakers delivering a nice talk to you. You need to be taking the information home with you and applying it to your own reality on the ground in your own community. That's where the differences are going to be made. They're going to be made in local communities, folks. But only when people choose to get involved. That's the most important thing, is that people get involved. And there are a lot of initiatives out there that people can be involved in. I do urge people to sign up to the Full Circle Project and get involved in that. It's a wonderful mechanism that you can use to find an action group and create an action group in your area to be able to share information with other people around the world about what you're doing. There's Ken O'Keefe's World Citizen Initiative as well, and he has raised all the funds that he needs for that. So I think we're going to see some good legal work being done now, and we're going to see this initiative being honed and detailed and finalized and turned into something quite watertight that is going to provide some legal standing for people who do wish to make a stand against government. So I'm watching that with great interest. And there's all sorts of permaculture initiatives and all sorts of things happening, folks. So don't despair. There are many, many people in the world who are awake, and there are many people who want to get involved in projects. So please do go and sign up to the Full Circle Project and find a local group in your area. And if you can't find one, then create one. Everything you need to do so is there on the website, so please do get involved, ladies and gentlemen. And look, there's every reason for you to do so. There really is. There's every reason for everybody to want to get involved, folks. I mean, I don't know how much worse it's got to get. I mean, all you've got to do is look around, folks. I mean, if you just go through the news headlines, I mean, there's any number of reasons why you need to stand up. You know, recently in the United States, we had the police confiscate a healthy baby, and it isn't the first time they've done it, simply because the baby was born at home. It was a home birth, and so they came and confiscated the baby. And think about that, folks. They confiscated a baby. I mean, this is your baby. This isn't a used car or something. This isn't a vacuum cleaner. This is a baby. And they even used the word confiscate. I mean, this is insane, folks. And this is, as I said, happened on more than one occasion. There's been times where there's been twins that have been confiscated by police as well, simply because they were born at home. We've got the cashless society looming its ugly head. We've got Norway's largest bank calling for the total end to cash. We've got China saying they want to issue their own digital currency. And so they're attempting to digitize everything. This is all going on around us. There's been 33 cities in the United States that have banned sharing food with the homeless. I mean, can you believe that, folks, really? I mean, you're not allowed to give homeless people food. It's now a crime to help other human beings in need because it doesn't fit with the economic system. Now, like I said, folks, I don't know what it's going to take before people wake up and smell the coffee, but this is simply not right. I mean, there's something incredibly disturbing about a government drafting legislation which prohibits man from helping mankind. I mean, just think about this, folks. You know, making it a crime to feed the homeless, I would suggest that that itself is a crime. I would suggest the government has committed a crime against humanity by essentially outlawing charity, which is what they've done. Unless, of course, you are a registered government-approved charity whereby most of your money collected can be milked and funneled off into other areas that won't help the needy. This seems to be the way most charities work. Most charities that people donate to seem to spend most of the money on paying the wages of the staff before any of the needy people get anything. Either that or making sure they've covered all of the government's fee structure that they've put in place, because of course that's why the government wants to be involved, because it wants to charge you a fee for every single thing that you do, even if you are a charity that is working to fix up a problem that the government has created. Actually, probably most especially, if that's what you're doing, they seem to want to take as much money from you as they can, because after all, they probably spent so much money creating the problem in the first place that they don't really want to see people come in and destroy their handiwork, especially if it's being done for any pesky humanitarian reasons. I mean, after all, there's no profit in humanitarianism. You know, really what we need to do is put humanitarianism back at the top of the pyramid. We need to put that back at the top of our priorities, because most of the situations that we see in the world today are due to a lack of humanitarianism. In fact, this entire system is anti-human in almost every aspect of the system. Just the fact that we're ruled by economics is very anti-human. The fact that they would make it illegal to feed homeless people. You know, I really view these people as trash, as riffraff, as something disgusting that you don't want to be around, you know. Like, there's been a subtle change in human consciousness, in human psyche, where we've had humanity removed from the equation in almost every aspect of our lives in the way we look at anything. We don't look at it from a human perspective. We look at it from an economic or business perspective. We look at it from the perspective of whether it is successful to do this, and it's what we class success as being, which is always something to do with economics or social standing. It's never anything to do with spiritual growth or being able to help people around you or improve the lot of society. And it's all about personal gain. You know, we've had our priorities changed. It's been a subtle shift in perspective that's happened over a matter of generations, maybe over the last 40 or 50 years, but it's certainly happened, and it's shifted our perspective of who and what we are, and it's shifted our perspective of what success is. And it's really changed things. It's really changed the human condition, just this subtle shift in perspective. And the way we've been dehumanized, in as much as the way we now look at other people who are less successful, and this is the way we judge people. We judge people by their social standing, by what they've managed to accumulate, not by what type of person they actually are. And that's a very, very sad thing. Admittedly, we've been doing this for a while. I mean, it hasn't just been over the last 40 or 50 years. This has been an ongoing thing for many hundreds of years. We've had this kind of judgment towards each other, where it's always been about the stuff that you own and the social standing that you have, which is what makes people want to be your friend and all this sort of stuff. I mean, people want to hang around with those who are more affluent than they are because that's what they perceive success to be. And often those who are more affluent like to have a few people who aren't so affluent hanging around with them so they can show off their wealth. And that's a lot of what it is. I mean, it isn't that people even want the wealth. They just want to have things because they know that that's what other people want. And as long as I've got what you want, then I feel successful even if I don't want it. This is kind of the mentality that we've been trained to have. You know, we don't really need this stuff. We just want to have what other people want so that they'll want to be around us. And we have kind of compensated real friendship and replaced it with this type of adoration and this exhibitionism, because that's essentially what it is. It's just exhibitionism. We exhibit all of our wares and all of the stuff that we have because we want the adoration of others, and we view this as friendship. We really have become quite a strange species, folks. You know, we really have had all of these subtle changes in our personalities inflicted upon us. I mean, it's the society that's done it. It's the training that we've had given to us, the education systems that we've been subject to, but it's very interesting when you look at it to see what our perspective of friendship has become, simply because our perspective of friendship is now deeply based in materialism and in social and economic standing. And it's been a very, very subtle change, but it has affected us very, very profoundly on a soul level. But look, I think we're at break time here, folks. I can hear the rain coming as well, so we may be in for a bit of a rainstorm for the rest of the show here in the Amazon, but we'll just see how that goes. But we are at break time, folks, so I'm going to have to leave it there for now, and we'll go and have a break, and I'll speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Well, we seem to have escaped the rain, so that's a little bit of a reprieve for now. Perhaps it will come back. We'll just see how we go with that one. But yeah, what a ride it's been. What an interesting ride it's been, and what an interesting condition we find the world in today. The question is, how do we deal with it? And that's been the question on everyone's mind for so long, of course. And you get flack for not knowing the answer to that question. I mean, people need to understand this is a collective consciousness. It's a collective projection. And one person, I don't believe, could possibly have all the answers. We need to work in cooperation with each other in order to find the answers. That has been one of my biggest missions through this whole process, through everything I've done. What I've attempted to do is locate all of the so-called leaders, or most of the leaders in this movement, and attempt to unite them into a common focus, because when we have that common focus, I think we're going to be able to find a way through the problem. But we have to have that common focus and that common respect in order to achieve anything. You know, the biggest and most effective part of the control grid, I believe, is the divide and conquer strategy, is the way society has been trained not to respect each other. I know I keep harping on this, but, you know, it seems to me to be the biggest part of the control grid, the fact that we can't just stand together as one united voice. You know, you talk about unity, you talk about trying to get people to come together and work together, and you get accused of being a New Ager or a socialist or worse. It's people have these preconceived ideas of everything being an ism, New Ageism or socialism or communism or whatever. You know, what about freeism? What about respectism? You know, what about just allowing people to be themselves and to create to the best of their potential? We seem to have forgotten all of these sorts of values. I don't think many people can truly see the scope of human potential, just how vast it is, you know, of human creative potential. You know, we have the ability to do so many things. You know, we could achieve just about anything we want to achieve if we put our minds to it. And if we could work in cooperation and in unison, it would be incredible. The sky would be the limit. But we don't think that way. We think always in terms of personal gain. And it's the same even in the truth movement or the so-called alternate media, independent media, whatever you want to call it. Most people seem to have their own agenda. I mean, sure, they're pushing their own website and they're trying to promote themselves, and that's understandable. But they seem to really, really shy away from anything that may be construed as unity. Nobody wants to unite with anybody else because nobody trusts anybody else. There's been a huge effort undertaken by the powers that believe they be to implant distrust in anybody. There's people out there posting cynical views in comment sections all over YouTube and Facebook. Everybody trying to call everybody else out as a shill and place that air of distrust out there for everybody, so nobody knows who to trust anymore, so nobody wants to unite with anybody else, and most people seem to be just serving their own agendas. And it's not getting us anywhere. We've got to put down all of this stuff, and as I keep saying, pull our heads out of our rabbit holes for the moment and just pay attention to what's happening around us. We need to address the situation, we really do. And if we're not going to have this unity and we're not going to have this respect, then I really don't know how we're ever going to be able to move this forward in any type of workable way. You know, it's one thing to want to pull the government down and fix the system and bring about freedom for mankind and to talk about it and all this sort of stuff that we do and to call the system out, to point the finger at the powers that believe they be and name them for what they are. And it's one thing to want this change to come about, but it's another thing to actually do it, and another thing again to actually work cooperatively with other people in order to bring these changes about. And ultimately, when it comes down to it, folks, that's what we're going to have to do. You know, no one's got all the answers, and no one can just go out there and say, this is the change we're going to do, and this is how we're going to implement it, and just do it, because that's called dictatorship, and it doesn't work that way. I mean, sure, you may be a benevolent dictator. You may be the best dictator the world could ever have, best thing that's ever happened to mankind, and you're going to do the right thing. But you're never going to convince everybody of that. So it's got to be done in the right way. And so that's why we need to be sensible about it. We need to be sensible in our approach towards fixing this situation. And we need to realize that everybody has a piece of the puzzle, everybody has a say, and everybody needs to have a say, everybody's going to want to have a say, and everybody should be allowed to have a say. So we've got to let them do that, and that has to come from respect, because without respect, we're never going to get anywhere. We're just going to sit here and squabble amongst each other, point the finger at whoever it is we want to point the finger at today, blame them for all of our troubles, but we're not actually doing anything to alleviate the situation ourselves, because we're not respecting ourselves enough to respect those around us. That's a big part of the problem. And that's why I've always harped on so much about respect and about breaking down barriers and building ties in your community, just baking biscuits or cakes or something, you know, building a veggie garden, doing something for the neighbours, going to a ball game with them, even if you don't like ball games, just doing something that they like, so that you can break down these barriers and become their friend and get to know them and start exchanging political views and start exchanging ideas and start working towards a better future. I mean, this is how it all happens, folks. This is how every idea ever came about. It was from two people having a conversation. Any change that we see in the world today, whether it be good or bad, it all came about because someone had an idea that they were willing to discuss with somebody else, and it resonated. And then it turned into reality for everybody. And we can all do this, but we have to first be able to have these conversations. And of course, that isn't going to happen unless we learn to respect people. And so that's why I come back to it so very often. You know, every journey starts with a single step, folks. And the journey to freedom, I believe, has to start with that respect. It has to start with you, each individual, removing this stuff they have with other people and putting themselves in a place of respect so that we can talk and converse, and then we're actually going to be able to see some change. But if we don't have that common respect, then no matter what idea anybody puts forth, it's just going to always degenerate into argument and debate and never go anywhere. And we've seen this so very many times in the past. I think we should learn from these mistakes and really start putting things in perspective and learn that we are, well, when you look at freedom, we're kind of an infant species in regard to freedom. It's something new to the human experience. I certainly can't find any time in history that we've had it. And so this is a new reality for us, and we have to proceed with baby steps. And we're going to stumble a little bit at first. We're going to crawl, and eventually we'll be toddling, and then we may even be able to walk. But it has to start with the first step, and the first step is respect. You know, the future is in our hands, folks. The future is whatever we want it to be. It's whatever we make it. And when I look at the world today, I really cannot help but be concerned for my son and for future generations, for the world that we are allowing to be created around them, the world that we are allowing to be created for them, simply by our own inaction. You know, there's so many people that are awake to the situation. There are so many people that are awake to the control grid, but the response to the control grid is so divided. So many people who are awake are still maintaining their focus on their particular rabbit hole, on exposing more of the big conspiracy. And many of them don't even know how much of the conspiracy is true. A lot of it is just stuff that they've read on the internet. A lot of people haven't actually gone out and traveled and gone and checked things out for themselves firsthand. They just know what they've read online somewhere. They don't know who the sources are for that information, and they don't know whether the information is true or whether it's not. I mean, very often we just go for stuff that resonates with what we believe in. You know, we look for information that reinforces our belief system, and that's what we go with, and we discard everything else. But really, you have to look at all of it. And when you do look at all of it, it becomes very difficult to know what's going on at all. But we do have a real situation here, in as much as the future we are allowing to be created for our children, and we need to address this situation. You know, when I see the sleeping masses around me, especially in Australia, I see what Australia is becoming, and it's just unreal. It's not what Australia ever was. You know, militarized police everywhere, even in England you're seeing militarized police. All in the name of protecting us from terrorism, of course. But the police themselves look like terrorists, and you see that this is a global police force that's been constructed. Police all around the Western world now have this same riot squad look about them, this whole black Kevlar uniform, all this stuff hanging off their vests. This is the uniform of the global police force, ladies and gentlemen, and it's being rolled out right in front of our eyes, and you're seeing the same uniform in England, in America, in Australia, in New Zealand, in Thailand, in Indonesia, in Europe. You're seeing the same uniform all across the Western world. As I said on a show recently, folks, what this is essentially is a private army that the politicians have created to protect themselves from the people and to enforce corporate rule. And again, these police are not too bright. They're not real intelligent, the people that they're employing. And you can see how society's been constructed this way as well. We've constructed a society over the last few decades whereby we've had lots of single mothers, lots of broken homes, lots of kids growing up without a dad, lots of kids growing up being bullied at school with chips on their shoulders, a lot of social outcasts, a lot of degeneration of the education system as well. We've seen they don't really teach people what they need to know anymore. They don't teach them real life skills, and they certainly don't teach people how to think. They just train them to be good, functional little cogs in the big machine. And then they keep an eye on them. They socially profile people through school, and they see who would make good police officers, who would make good military personnel, who will make good workers, who will make good this, who will make good that, and they funnel them off towards those areas. And the people who are not too bright, who've grown up with the chip on their shoulder, make very, very good police officers. And this is what has happened. We've seen this whole social system has been created by design, and it's happened over quite a lengthy period of time, but really quite a short period of time if you look at global history. I mean, Over the past few decades, mankind has been basically stupefied. You know, we've been dumbed down, we've been chemically dumbed down and academically dumbed down, and now society is splitting into two very visible classes of the extremely rich and all the other people. And this, of course, is being separated by a wall of not-too-bright police who all have chips on their shoulders. Many have sociopathic tendencies. They all belong to this big club that allows them to basically get away with murder, get away with anything they want to do. And you can see how this whole system has been constructed and designed. So what we have to do is find a way of nipping it in the bud before it completely comes online. But that's got to be done by addressing the root core of the problem, which is the corruption of the system itself, the corruption of the politicians that operate within the system anyway. This is what I've been saying recently. We've got to start calling these people out for abuse of office, but we need united communities to do it. And this has been the gist of the Full Circle Project, to get people together into these united communities and to start pushing this action forward. What the action is something that we're still trying to locate. I mean, I had a concept about 12 months ago that we could just go for abuse of office, but they've changed the legal system so much in the last 12 months that it's really gotten to the point that no matter what sort of remedy like that you put forth, it's not going to work unless you've got a groundswell of people. And so that is really what is needed more than anything, is for people on the ground to get involved. And please, that's what Full Circle Project is for, folks. That's what the Community Connector is for. Because, I mean, I'm trying to find the way through this. I'm doing what I can to try to help mankind find a way through this mess, but I have to openly admit that I don't have all the answers. All I can do is put forth ideas and see if those ideas resonate. But, you know, I don't have all the ideas, but maybe if we get together and everybody gets together and we start putting all of our ideas on the table and we start discussing things, then we're going to find a way out of this mess. And that's what I've been promoting right from the very start, folks, because that's what's going to bring us to safety. It's when people choose to get involved. And all you've really got to do, as I keep saying, is just look at the system. Look at the world we've got. Look at what's been created around us. And you can't help but want to get involved. I mean, really, what choice do you have? You can't just sit back and let this system come online. You've got to start looking for mechanisms to use against the system. And there are things we can use. I mean, again, Gaza Strip, I keep coming back to this, but it's getting the attention of people. You know, I've had so many people say to me with my videos and with the shows that I've put out that, you know, you've put out the solution so many times of what we can do, and all it would take really to change the world would be for enough people to listen to your radio shows. So, you know, I mean, I do what I can, folks, but sometimes I get frustrated because I'm not seeing these changes manifest in the world around me, I guess. It does get to you a little bit. You put out the answers and you think it will resonate with people. And even when it does resonate with people, you just don't see it springing into action. You don't see the information being shared, which can get to you a little bit sometimes, I do admit. Although I know that there is a limit to how much people can share of my information. Stuff certainly doesn't come up on Facebook that I post. I notice that, folks, because I have two Facebook profiles and I can post stuff on my profile and then I can log in with another browser on a different profile and go and check the other page that I posted stuff on, and I find that I can't see it. And if it is there, sometimes I can't share it. So I know how much they limit things on social media. But if you go and check the website every day, I do update the headlines every day. If you do go and check once a day and check the radio archives and check the YouTube channel, you'll find that I do post quite a bit of stuff. And if you share it directly from the website or from the YouTube channel, you'll probably have better results. And it's probably the same for other people, folks. I've noticed that they do this with anybody who's making a difference. They limit how much information can be shared by these people, or how much information of these people can be shared. But you find all the other stuff, all the stuff that is distractions and disturbances and stuff that is creating division or limiting the response to the system, that's all very, very freely available. So it becomes apparent what information is important and what information isn't. And it also, it's kind of comforting in a way, because you know you're making a difference when they start limiting your pages and censoring your Facebook pages and censoring your YouTube account and doing all the things they've done to me, limiting my PayPal accounts. They keep closing my PayPal down all the time. So at least I know I'm on the right track, folks, because they definitely seem to try to make things as difficult as they can for me, which can get a little frustrating, but like I said, it does give you a little bit of confidence that you're on the right track anyway. And I really believe the right track at this point is to use the system against itself. I really do. And like, there's going to be people out there that are going to be saying, oh, you're attempting to fight fire with fire. But no, it isn't that. It's attempting to get people's attention, because attention is the most valuable resource on earth, and we need people's attention. And in order to get that attention, you need to speak to them in a language they can understand. And so that means you need to start using elements of the system against itself in a way that people can identify with. And you'll find that if you're sensible, you can do this. And it comes back to what I was saying before about taking baby steps and about it being a series of steps that it's taken to get us to this point. And we need to find a way of reversing the sequence, but we've got to take the steps in the right order. And the first step, I would say, is respect. But then the second step is to, once you have that respect, to use the system against itself in a manner that will expose the system as being this corrupt corporate fictional construct that it is. I mean, then we can get back to a point where we don't need the system at all. But for the time being, you've got to speak to the sleeping masses in a language they can understand. And there are plenty of elements within the system that we can use against itself. And the fact that Gaza Strip is there, folks, the fact that I got beaten up for speaking out against Israel, the fact that all of these things have happened to me because I identified Gaza Strip as a possible mechanism that we could use to free us completely right across this entire world, because it's a war crime, and it therefore provides a mechanism we can use to rein all of our corrupt politicians in. I mean, this has been identified as a possible mechanism that we can use to completely circumvent this system in its tracks right now if we simply open up our hearts to humanity and open up our hearts to the people of Palestine. And I've received an enormous amount of flack for putting that idea forth, and so I think there's merit in that idea. I'm beginning to see that the people who get the most flack are usually the ones who have ideas that have the most merit. So this is why I'm so wary on all of these people who are so willing to call everybody else out as a shill. I think that the ones who are calling people out as shills are the real shills. I think that some of the people that we've been told are not on the right path actually are on the right path, and I think that's why they get vilified and attacked the way they do. I don't know. It would be really nice to see people put their stuff down and stop attacking everybody else and listen to what other people have to say. You know, we are going to find a way out of this mess if we can only learn to cooperate, folks. I mean, who knows? There might be someone out there who actually has the answers already. Maybe you would have heard them if you had just cooperated and listened. Maybe we would have all heard the answers had we not been told to distrust everybody around us. You know, were there not so many keyboard warriors out there who never leave their houses, who research all this stuff that they've never actually gone and seen for themselves, that's all been written by people they've never met, you know, and they're out there spreading cynicism about everybody and distrust about everybody and don't trust anybody because all opposition must be controlled. All of these programs that people have bought into. You know, if we could put some of that down and just learn to respect each other and cooperate with each other, we'd find a way out of this mess really quickly. And if we can't learn to do that, then we're really digging our own graves. We really are. We've got no one to blame for our situation but ourselves. You know, if we allow the police state to come online, you know, if we allow these politicians to keep going and to build this catastrophe that they are actually building, which is what the future they're creating is, it may be great for them, all very regimented and all very controlled and all the books are balanced and everyone's walking between the lines, but it's going to be a catastrophe as far as human consciousness goes, as far as human expression goes. If we allow them to do that, you know, then we deserve what we get. If we can't simply cooperate and respect each other and see the beauty in each other. You know, why do people view themselves as just being little people? Why do people view themselves as being someone who's useless, who can't make a difference? Why do they allow themselves to be controlled? Why do they think, oh, I'm just a little guy, I can't do this, I can't make change, I have to do what I'm told? Why do people just accept authority the way they do and accept the destruction of their environment and the theft of their habitat and the theft of their very lives from them? Why do people accept it? It's been an endless source of fascination to me. But it's coming to a head, I think. It's got to stop because people are seeing that it can't go on this way. And I hope it does stop. I hope people do wake up and they do step into their power, and I do hope real change comes about. Because if it doesn't, then I really don't know how mankind will escape from the control grid that is being built around them. So I really do hope people wake up and see it in time, and I do hope that people begin to step into their souls and feel it in their hearts that they have to act and that they stand up and do so. That's what it's going to take, folks. It's going to take action from people on the ground, and we need it to happen as quickly as possible. We need it to happen right now. But we are getting very close to the end of the show here, ladies and gentlemen, so I'm going to have to wrap it up very soon. Now, as I mentioned near the start of the show today, I'm going to be speaking in Mexico next month, around about, I think it's February 19 to 21st or something like that, in Acapulco. It's the Acapulco Conference. So if you're anywhere near Mexico, it would be good to see you there. I'm also going to be speaking at the Free Your Mind Conference in Philadelphia sometime in April. I think it's around about mid-April. I'm also going to be speaking at the AV America Conference in Portland. So that's two gigs that I'll be doing in the United States. If you're anywhere in the area, it'd be great to see you there. I'm also going home to Australia in March to speak at the Maitreya Festival in Victoria. I also have a gig in Byron Bay and a couple of other gigs that I think may be around the Brisbane or Gold Coast area, but I'm not sure at this stage, but I'll keep you posted on them. And then I intend to come back to Peru and spend the rest of the year working on a film. I will try to get some more radio shows done while I'm out and about doing all these things. I'll try to get one done next week. I don't know whether I'll be able to get one done the weekend that I'm in Mexico, but you never know. I intend to have a guy on the show soon, a guy called Charles Strange. This is the father of one of the men who died in SEAL Team 6. Very interesting story. He's got some information he really would like to share with the world. He's been stonewalled by the Obama administration, as one would expect. But there seems to be some very, very interesting details surrounding the deaths of SEAL Team 6, and would appear that many of the members of SEAL Team 6 knew that they weren't going to last very long, because they knew they had been involved in a huge lie in regard to the so-called death of Osama bin Laden. So I'm looking forward to having a talk to Mr. Strange when I can catch up with him. It's been very difficult here on Amazonian internet, which is extremely unreliable at best, but we do what we can. But that is a show that I'll definitely be bringing to you within the next little while, as soon as I can put it together. And I should be able to get a show done for you next week anyway, so that'll be something to look forward to. But we are pretty well at the end of the show here, folks. I'm going to have to leave it here for now. Thank you to anybody who has ever helped with the website and made a contribution. As I said near the start of the show, contributions can no longer be made via PayPal. You can only make direct transfers, and I am attempting to open a Fund What You Love page. I'll see if I can get that done by next week, and I'll give you the details for that. But thank you to anybody who ever has. It really is wonderful of you to do so. But I'm completely out of time now, folks. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Please take very good care until then. In La Cache, my friends. In La Cache.